You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode, Lonely Among Us. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And the synopsis is, while transporting delegates, an alien life form wreaks havoc on the Enterprise computer and begins to take over the minds of her crew. This is the seventh episode of Season 1. This was first aired on November 2nd, 1987, written by D.C. Fontana, and directed by Cliff Boyle, who has directed much better stuff than this, like Best of Both Worlds, as well as a few episodes of DS9 and Voyager. But anyway, guest stars, John Durbin as one of the Selig delegates, and they do give his name as like C-C-C-ster or something, so I'll just say he's one of the Selig delegates, and Mark Alamo as one of the Antigen. I had no idea it was Mark Alamo.
Well, he took his name off the show, though.
Must have, but he's still showing as one of the uncredited stars out there, I should say. But I'm going to put him in because Mark is pretty important to Star Trek. And we also have Cole Meany as first security guard in his second appearance in Star Trek, as well as Kavi Rez as the drop-in engineer, Lieutenant Singh, yes, of the week, because Biff couldn't be bothered for this one. But they do mention Argyle by name. They just can't be borrowed. So what do we think about this one? As I said, Cliff Boyle has directed much better stuff than this. So you're kind of get an idea of what I think. What about you, James?
Well, actually, Lou, I think you're going to have to find yourself another co-host. Because I remember finding this episode, you know, when I originally watched it and originally rewatched it and originally re-rewatched it, I thought this was always dreadful. A horrendous episode. But I watched it this week. I enjoyed it for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, the episode's not good. I mean, that's clear. But I mean, it tickled me more than perhaps it should have done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing you're going on holiday because, my friend, you need it. One of the comments we got is that people love our banter back and forth, and we're not going to disappoint them today, are we?
Hopefully not.
I don't think so. But first, before we go on to the show, why don't we do a little bit of feedback? And hello, everyone. Before we get into tonight's feedback, I wanted to warn you that you will be hearing feedback from the android. The android is Brian Baker. This show was recorded on Friday, April 4th, 2 days before we found out that Brian was on life support and not expected to survive. The reason no one knew he was ill was because Brian told me less than 24 hours before it happened that he got a new cell phone, and he gave me the phone number, but apparently he hadn't yet plugged in any contacts, so it took a while for his family to find us and let us know. Therefore, again, you will be hearing comments that Brian posted. It's also worth noting that Brian also commented on the next episode as well, and that would be his last. So, thank you for your time, and let's go ahead and go back to the comments. The first one we're going to talk about is one from The Naked Now. And on a momentary notice, as I was reading that the director was Paul Lynch, and I tossed in, Paul Finch. Paul says, He was going wee-wee at the time, I guess you could say. He was in the loo I guess you might call it, when I said directed by Paul Finch. He was amazed and then disappointed that he peed on the seat. Thanks, James and Lou. You're welcome.
Yes, to which the android replies, "What a testimonial. I'm saving this podcast for my Monday commute, so I'll be back." And I do believe he does come back.
Yes, I do believe he does. But see, it goes to show you, no matter whether you're coming or you're going, you're listening to the Battle Bridge. So both of them got some plus marks. Paul got 3 and the android got 4. Then Kieran McDuff comes in and says, "Good point about Dr. Crusher being incompetent in this episode. Although I think it was going a bit far to rip into her for having McCoy's work and still not getting the cure. She did try McCoy's cure on Geordi and it didn't work. And I know from experience there's nothing quite as frustrating as having something that should work but doesn't. As for Tasha, why did no one mention her weird Superman hair curl? Or was I the only one looking at that particular aspect of the out-of-uniform Lieutenant Yar?" Totally missed that one, but yes, I remember the hair curl thing.
Yeah, no, I didn't notice that. And actually, I did read this comment, and I did listen back to the episode myself, and I actually think that Kieran does have a point. I think I was far too harsh on Crusher on this. I kept going. I do remember, of course, she did try the antidote, but she still had the medical research, so it should have gotten her most of the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, Captain Proton, you know, he adds into Kieran's post saying that he also never noticed the Superman haircut. But then he goes on to comment, "Says, glad you like this one, Doc. So do I. Also, I did like your reason in rating episodes. It's nearly impossible to be consistent thumbs up or thumbs down."
Mm-hmm.
To which I then go off and I explain a bit of what it. Now I go back and forth on a bit of trying to put out my philosophy on rating episodes, which is basically just a 5-star scale. I mean, I think we can jump down to your comment there, Lou.
Pretty much. But it says, one of the doc's comments was that I kept in a little bit of the mumbling about the ratings making the final cut. And you know something that's funny? Let me set this up. I'll say, oops, sorry, Doc. If I let the mumblings say, unless they're funny, I usually try to remove them. I'll do better next time. And then Paul takes us to the potty, which we mentioned. The Superman haircut thing, we totally screwed that one. But thanks for the comments, guys. Keep them coming. You know the thing it's funny about this there, James? You said you listened to the show after we edit it.
Yes, yes.
I don't. I can't voice.
No, but you have to listen to it whilst editing, right? So because you do all the editing, I get the, you must listen to yourself at least once.
Yes, but see, the thing is I kind of fake it a little bit once in a while. I try to remember at what points the edits are while we're doing them and we make a mistake. But as far as if I really don't have any noticeable mistakes, I really don't go that far into editing. I don't listen to the entire thing because I can't stand my voice. I hate it. And especially after recorded shows that get posted, I do not go back and listen to them because I can't stand them. It sounds weird to me.
No, I absolutely agree that I sound weird to me too. That's absolutely the case. But I have been, I've been trying to listen basically to see how bad it is and see what I can do to get better, right? I'm relatively new on in this front still. I like how I think it's good to see how the end product, hits the shelf, as a manner of speaking.
Right. But you know something I did notice in the last few episodes that we've done is that you and I have different approaches to the whole genre of Star Trek, whereas I'm more of a flippant kind of poke fun at it and stuff. You're more of the analytical part. Do you ever notice that?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And although the thing I kind of notice is that I defend almost everything that we're going to come across. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I can't poke fun of it, at it, and it's clearly, there's stuff there, but I would go as far as saying I think even bad Star Trek is good. So I don't want to come across as, you know, as hating it in any way. I think some of the worst stuff that they do is some of the best stuff that's out there, and I enjoy it. I don't think there's anything in Trek that I would kind of banish off the face of the earth, even the really bad stuff.
Like the one for today. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And the android comes back with, it says Yarel, as in the daughter of Jor-El, the last daughter of the Krypton. Wait, is Ashar-El older or younger? Isn't Ashar-El older?
I don't remember either. We'll get mail, I'm sure.
Okay, we'll go ahead and go on to the next one.
Okay, and then the android comes back. He is back. He said, next week it's Yar versus Urena. So he's already, tempted to look forward to the Code of Honor review. It doesn't bother me that Now copies and embraces, quote, time. So the naked Now embraces the naked time. Look into the future of all the episodes that are highly derivative of previous chapters. Don't single out this one because it's attempting to sequel in itself. Otherwise, you might as well blame it for having Star Trek in the title. I mean, I think that's a good point. I think there are, you know, even if you don't necessarily copy the storyline, there are, you know, clearly episodes inspired by things that have previously come. A lot of the, I was speaking about, you know, E Squared clearly replicates a lot of the stuff done in either a Yesterday's Enterprise or in Children of Time and things like that. I think it's all perfectly fine because, I mean, often it's usually the mechanism under which they tell the story, and the story that they tell is different, even though the mechanism can be similar. And then, of course, you can have situations where the mechanism is different and the story is the same. So anyway, I'm rambling here. As going back to the android's comment, as for Wesley, the only way he can appear smart, even gifted, is when the adults are bigoted and dumbed down. Data Lore is a juicy example. Sure, Wes's portable tractor beam and old-fashioned tape recorder are evidence that he's brilliant, but how else can a drunk kid outfox grown-up if the senior staff doesn't take a dose of no-brains? And then he also comments, I try not to overuse fractions in ratings. I don't like them either. I've adopted a 5-star and a 10-star scale. I personally like the 4-star scale, a 4-star scale of 4 being excellent, 3 being good, 2 being average stroke mediocre, 1 being poor, and no stars for the cinematic stroke televised turds. In a sense, it's a 5-star scale where the zeros are used. Another great podcast, most enjoyable. So thank you very much to the android for that.
I see his point. I'd rather keep a 5-star because obviously we don't want to make a 0-star. I mean,
Are we allowed?
I don't think so. It's Star Trek. You can't give anything in Star Trek a 0 stars. That's just blasphemy.
And I do remember, I mean, I think what universally accepted as a bad Star Trek episode, you know, Code of Honor, it was my first Star Trek, and it was still good enough to get me to come back. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing The Final Frontier and thinking, yes, this is it. And it's never all bad, right?
No, it can't be zeros. There's no such thing in Star Trek. Okay, so anyway, Medic ends the posting there with, just caught up listening to all the Battle Bridge posts today. Love the name, by the way. Thank you. I'm thinking that came from Colin. I think Colin's the one who blurted out the Battle Bridge. So I'm going to give him credit for that. When TNG came out, I was 12 years old. Up to that point, Star Trek to me was watching reruns of TOS, me too, on Saturday mornings. So for me, I didn't watch TNG until the second season. I just couldn't accept a bald captain, a Klingon on the bridge, and no Kirk, Spock, Scotty. So after I got hooked on TNG, thanks to Time Squared, I had to go back and get caught up with the first season. For me, this episode wasn't very good and was a ripoff from TOS. I think it was too early in the series to have an episode like this. We barely knew the characters. I try and give the first season a pass, but I still find it a struggle to watch most episodes, mainly because of how good TNG became. There are some good episodes. Arsenal of Freedom is my favorite episode from season 1 and Skin of Evil, but most are not. Code of Honor, Angel One, and Justice, to name a few. Either way, I will be adding this podcast to my must-listen-to list. I look forward to your shows and will enjoy reminiscing with you each week. Good job. Thank you, Medic.
I have to agree with the Medic, though, that I love Times Squared. I haven't seen it. Perhaps I haven't seen it, and perhaps I haven't analyzed it with a critical eye. But I do remember seeing that one very young as well. I mean, I have a couple of episodes that stick out almost as my first run episodes where I caught a couple here, a couple there, kind of thing. You know, when you're young, you don't necessarily have control of the TV. And Times Square is one that certainly sticks in my mind for, the double Picard situation and the really spooky way that, you know, he ends up interacting with himself because he's out of shift on the timeline. And I thought that was interesting because often when you run into a doppelganger of yourself, they seem to be perfectly fine. And I think this is one of the only cases where, you know, the man out of time was damaged. And was not able to, not able to communicate. And I think it really, I like the way that affected Picard and how he not only, was he thrown as to being, eventually going to become into this position. He didn't know what was going to happen, but also I think he had he didn't like the fact that he was going to become, incapable of making the decisions and things like that. So it's a great episode. I look forward to it.
Yes, and he doesn't like Justice, which we will be doing next week. I don't know. I like Justice. There's some reasons. We'll talk about Justice later. Because I love it when Star Trek goes into the philosophical things, and it's going to tickle me next week. So we'll talk about it. So that's the end of that. Let's go on to Code of Honor. And you want to go start off with Mark?
Yep, sure. I'm on my way. Okay. I'm afraid.
That's okay.
I'm just navigating the world.
No problem.
I do remember seeing his comment. Doesn't he criticize you for handing this one a two? There we go. Here it is. Two, Lou? Really? I mean, really? This is quite possibly one of the worst Star Trek episodes ever made and easily made it onto my shipwrecked trek on 10 Forward last year. Looking forward to reviewing Where No One Has Gone Before, although Mark does state Where No Man Has Gone Before.
It does say that. I had never noticed it.
If you're lucky, I might even perform my Lutan impression for you.
And he didn't.
No, he didn't.
He didn't. No. The best Lutan impersonation was the android we got from Brian Baker. So hopefully you guys like that. He's going to do another one, matter of fact, for as you're hearing this. We've already passed it, but he's going to do another intro for Where No One Has Gone Before. So I haven't quite gotten that from Brian yet, so we'll see. All right, Mark, yeah, I know it's a two. I just like the cat fight. I like the cat fight. I don't know why. The poor sucker gets a spine. You know, he's just sitting there watching the cat fight, and he ends up dying because, I don't know. I just like it. But... yeah, no, you're right, Mark. It's a terrible one. Anyway, Paul says, wow, every time I watch, listen, or accidentally see this episode, I'm still shocked at how racist it is. But let's not forget the real ultimate racist episode of TNG, Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa isn't racist. Sub Rosa is fine.
That's
on that front.
Season 7, isn't it?
It's all the way at the back end of Season 7. I mean, I suppose midway through Season 7. I think Up the Long Ladder is worse on the Irish caricatures that get her trouted out. I don't seem to remember there being. I mean, maybe I'm not as sensitive as Paul to the portrayal of Scottish as these. Did they really portray them in a bad light?
I don't think so either. I mean, he had the. I don't know. Lutan did have the stupid accent that we had already discussed about, but. I don't know. Racist? I don't quite get that. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it, but okay. Well, anyway.
Okay, and then Jarek follows up by saying, can't wait to watch the episode. Not seen it since it originally aired on BBC Two way back when. Now, BBC Two is our, you know, that's our national broadcaster, where at least the, you know, at least, I suppose most people would have watched TNG and Deep Space Nine on, and you would have got one episode a week, throughout the, yeah, throughout the years. Usually 3 years behind the US, yes. At least initially would have been 3 years behind the US.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Just like the one we're doing today, it was 3 years behind. Okay, so then the android says, Tasha secretly admiring Lutan despite kidnapping her seems odd, unless that too is playing into the black stereotype. Oh, it's true, it's true. He loves that. It also seems odd, like James said, the teenage girl delighted some strapping stud notices her, and from a woman raised on a rapey world called Tarkana 4, that Lutan and the Ligonians will probably begin having their way with her. And, what did Yar mean when she said, Troy, I'm your friend and you tricked me? What did Troy wear some paper-thin disguise and steal Yar's Cocoa Pebble cereal? If Yar shared her secret fantasy out loud, it's only because Tasha has a big mouth. Insert your own joke here. Two Ligonians walk into a bar when... No, I can't come up with anything that fast. Lou, what's it like... Oh, what's to like about the cat fight scene? There's no fighting. It's just an exercise to demonstrate that both these women are professional pole dancers. Guess I answered my own question. At least the soundtrack is cool and composed by old school and TOS composer Fred Steiner. Yeah, the pole dancing. I don't know. I mean, that's just like a cat fight once in a while. But you answered that question already. I don't know about the assuming that the entire planet or all the Ligonians are going to end up raping Tasha Yar. That seems like an overstretch to me. I don't know. There's really I don't get that indication. Matter of fact, I don't get the indication there's anything of that nature going on in the planet. Unless a woman wants it because she owns the land. I don't know. What do you think, James? To me, that just, I don't know. It doesn't sound right.
No. But I do have to say, I am enjoying the, I am enjoying every now and again people claiming that I'm right on the comments. Mm. Because I think the android did mention that, yes, as James said, keep that up. That's always good.
Yes, yes. And maybe somebody out there will think I'm right. I don't know. Do you want to read mine?
Do you want me to read your reply?
Yeah, go for it.
He said, and the voice of Lutan before the show began was top draw. He said, I don't know why I like the cat fight. It was stupid, I know. I regretted my two not too long after I gave it. But what is recorded is done. I'll think harder next time. I don't quite get the Troy tickling Yar angle.
Tricking.
Did I say tickling? Whoops.
That's staying in, my friend. That's staying in.
How did she trick her? It's wrong. It's wrong to admit to your male captain that you're attracted to another man. How rude. I can't wait till the season gets better. Android, are you sure you want to sit out this out? You've heard how we go. You can always change your mind and come in once in a while.
And I wrote to Brian and asked him if he would be interested in coming on the show for any Android topics. You know, day to day would be a great one for him to get in on.
And obviously as well, I mean, the invitation goes out to any listener, right?
Absolutely, that everyone.
If they want to jump on a particular show that they either have a love for or a hate for, and they want to have have their opinion heard,
absolutely,
everyone. We won't bite.
I even sent out a message to Brian Dedamore and told him if he ever wants to come onto the show for a Klingon show, he'd always be welcome to. So that goes to anybody. If you got a persona or anything that you really like, please let us know. BattlebridgePodcast@gmail.com or just LewTrekShow@gmail.com is the best way.
We'll probably have to have like some type of lottery for Shades of Grey because we will expect, you know, a large number of people requesting to get onto that show.
Yes, let me see something here. Shades of Grey.
Of course no one's going to want to come to that show.
Yeah, no, we don't go that far anyway. We're just dealing with season one. Okay, so anyway, we'll end up this topic, quote and honor, with Medic 1849 that says, this episode is rated a 1 for me. I cringe anytime it is on TV, and I'm afraid to let my kids watch it because it's so bad. I feel the episode was trying to show that superior force could use diplomacy and respect cultural differences rather than take the peace through superior firepower approach. Unfortunately, it wasn't executed very well at all. You made a great point that Tasha could have been raped by this guy while they tried the diplomatic route. Didn't I say that? I think I mentioned that one. Hey, I got it one that's on my side. I wonder how season 3 Picard would have dealt with the situation. Probably not as diplomatic. These first few episodes can be challenging to watch. I don't know how successful TNG would have been in today's climate. I don't think the networks would have been so patient. Agreed. And yes.
I think the only thing you have to, of course, throw into the mix is that, you know, television back when TNG was ropey also, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can compare the current. You can look back at the 80s and say, well, you know, lots of the shows, surely how would they have been ever commissioned? So I would always be cautious about taking anything out of context, because it doesn't live in isolation. It lives with the rest of the TV at the time. And there certainly wasn't any decent sci-fi, anything approaching even season one of TNG on the air at this point.
It never would make it today's. Today's era is reality shows. I call them pseudo reality shows. They're supposed to be reality, but they're very scripted reality. They may be taken off of things that might really happen, but that's not reality. No. So, I don't know about what goes on over there, but the biggest reality show that I've seen here is one called Pawn Stars. Basically, it's in Las Vegas, a pawn shop that gets customers that bring in trinkets that they want to sell to the pawn shop. And they haggle over the price. He calls in his buddies to get a good determination of whether it's real or whatever it is. But even I believe that's fake.
Actually, I do like, I mean, perhaps just worth mentioning, and, you know, would you really appreciate the comments? I will be checking. You know, I check almost daily and sometimes more often, certainly when I'm trying not to work. And it's always great to hear everyone's opinion, and it's nice to know that there are people out there listening.
This is a lot better of feedback than we've gotten on the Lou Trek Show, so believe me, I'm just eating all this up and loving it. Thank you, guys. So please send some more. Okay, so here we go. We're going to talk about Lonely Among Us. Uncredited stars, Mark Alamo is one of the Antigans. As I said, I did not know this. I thought this was his first appearance was the Romulan Tabok, but apparently not.
No, did you see his name? Did you see the name of the Antigan that he's supposed to be playing? Because I don't think it's mentioned in the episode, but it's certainly on Memory Alpha and whatnot.
Yes, I don't.
How would you pronounce that?
Oh, let me see here. I don't think any of the names were really given. But Badar NDD.
Yeah.
Badar NDD. Maybe it's a doctor of some kind. You think?
No, I'm afraid I think we're into the territory with both of these alien races where that's certainly how did these guys get warp drive. But even more than that, I mean, how did he? I don't think there's a medic among these people.
No. Yeah, I'm going to get into later about it's right here on line 3. Why not do it now? So both species want to be in the Federation, huh?
Well, the Federation must have very low standards.
Yes, and then I was thinking, how could they possibly entertain the notion of letting either of these two species in when the Bajorans took years to apply, and at the moment they were finally let in, Benjamin talks him into staying out. Do you think the standards change by the time DS9 comes around?
I think that this episode was written in a different time where they hadn't quite thought things through.
Right.
I'll be generous. I think that's what the issue is. Because I think, you know, the first thing is that they don't necessarily, in this episode, they don't claim that either of them have warp drive, which later becomes, you know, the point at which you kind of are allowed into the club, or at least you're allowed into the club in the sense that, you know, alien races will, you know, declare themselves to you and, you know, you'll enter into the, you know, spacefaring nations kind of a world. But even that's a long way away from being accepted into the Federation. So I just think that, you know, I think this is just an inconsistency with the rest of the canon. And I don't think, you know, this episode alone should negate the rest of the, you know,
no,
the rest of the following 12 years or whatever that is built onto it.
No, I suppose not, because later on they give you the impression that until a race hits warp drive, they wouldn't even be allowed to know the Federation exists.
No, that's true. That's true.
Okay. Well,
Sorry. No. You know, when you see the first scene and you see the people come over, what was your opinion on the makeup job here?
It was okay. I mean, they were pretty good. I do have lizards wearing clothing. That was one thing I noticed. I also noticed Picard and Riker in dresses. Okay. Yeah,
and what would you call the Antikans? What were they? Were they dog people or wolf people? What? I never quite managed to think. I didn't quite get get that one fully. But if you do look at the delegates, right, in both camps, it's a fairly substantial makeup job.
Yes.
You know, and it's clearly been produced for this episode. And on top of that, these are clearly aliens that are never going to come back again. I mean, they're not portrayed as, these are one shot aliens. I'm just astonished that we have 10 or so people in full makeup. I don't know what, you know, they must have had money to burn early on in the season.
Yeah, well, I imagine they did. The Antikans kind of, to me, in the forehead, in the head, remind me of Klingons a little, with just a lot of hair in the opposite places of their head. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And in particular, the Antikans, their jaw didn't quite work. As they were speaking, you could see that there was a slight disconnect between I think they must have had a prosthetic, you know, lower half of the face.
Oh, yeah.
On top of the, you know, the top head as well, and it just didn't quite move right. I wouldn't be surprised if that was in the episode was falling to pieces behind the scenes.
Maybe. As far as the Sally, you know, they kind of remind me of the Ophidian that Data deals with. And it's a two-part episode where they go back in time.
You mean Time's Arrow?
Time's Arrow. It's kind of what they kind of reminds me of in a way a little bit, but not much. That's a pretty good makeup job. And obviously they had to put the heavy clothing on them because they could only do the headpieces and the hands.
No, yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, but anyway, men in dresses again, and this time it's Picard and Riker. But they were allowed to wear leg stockings. It's their dress uniform.
No, yeah, but when were they not? Who wasn't allowed with allowed?
In the first couple episodes, especially Encounter at Farpoint, when you see the men walking in the hallway.
Oh, no, yeah. Sure. I mean, that's.
There's
a
difference. You know, obviously, Picard and Riker got to wear black leg stockings or something.
Yeah, except that they're in the formal gear now.
Yes.
So that was the less formal. Now they're in full dress uniform. No, okay. I'm following you.
Now let's see if there's something you could figure out here. I am looking at Memory Alpha because I like it. That mentions Cavi Raz, which... I did forget to mention Cavi Raz, I think is... I called him the drop-in engineer, Lieutenant Singh. It says he was not available for shooting of a scene in which Singh is seen in the background. Say that a few times. The production staff solved this by simply putting a wig on a chair as a photo double. I have scoured this episode trying to find that. I cannot find that anywhere. The only thing I could think of is there's at one point we get a shot from outside the ship that goes into the observation lounge. And outside the glass, you could see a head at a chair. Do you think that could be it, or do you know what they're talking about?
I suppose a couple of things now, because I don't know what they're talking about. It wasn't noticeable to me, but I think that your theory about the exterior shot is good. That must, you know, I think that must be it. But then also, I actually quite like that shot. I thought that was pretty good. You don't get to see that much. They don't do that as much in the as you go on. So I was quite pleased to see them being, well, they're clearly still being inventive and trying out things in the early seasons. And I noticed that shot and I did think it was good.
Right. Yep. Okay.
I think one of the things that we are still in, and I suppose it feeds more or less pretty consistent since the beginning of the season, is that we still have relatively smug humans here, right? Even as they welcome people aboard and the delegate, Riker comes across really, really, smug. As Riker and Picard walk onto the bridge, he's saying, "Oh, I don't understand." What is it? He said, I don't understand how two people could hate each other. Even humans never understood it. And I don't know. I can't imagine that's true, right?
Right.
It's not that far into the future, so that you're so disconnected from what happened in the past. But again, it's very much played that, humans are disconnected from rivalries or hatreds or various, warring factions. And we're still in very much smug territory with Riker. And actually, something that I noticed, which actually might not be picked up by some of the younger people out there now, yes, I probably am getting towards the old side of things, which is that when Riker and Picard are having the conversation, they're saying, they're having disagreements and, hostilities about, God concepts and customs. And they mention, they throw in even economic systems, which if you think about when this was originally produced, this would have been a throwback to the Cold War. And it certainly would have been I took it directly as a reference between, the communism and the capitalism. Still very much an issue at that point.
That's an interesting point.
And I suspect that the young kids nowadays, they don't think of it that way.
No, probably not. I don't know. No, I wouldn't even have thought of it then, too.
Okay, well, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
No, you could have a very good point there. I just don't know. I don't know much about the Cold War, to be honest. History is history for me. It's a long time ago since I went through any kind of history class. But okay, so anyway. Now let's assume that these two species are accepted into the Federation. How could they possibly coexist without trying to kill each other?
They can't. They can't, can they?
No.
I don't know. I mean, maybe there's an idea that some of the Federation's moral values will rub off on these people. Maybe they'll maybe they'll grow up a lot faster than looks anyway near possible. Also, if you listen to the introduction as Picard was speaking about how they've just come to the system and since achieving space flight, it made it sound like, I don't know if I picked it up wrong, but it made it sound like they had only known about each other for a relatively short period of time as well. So it seemed to me that these guys had both got into space around the same time, and then they'd started warring with each other, and that wasn't necessarily that long ago. So whichever way you cut it, I think that this is clearly ludicrously early in either of their, either of their histories to be considering a Federation membership.
Right. It's amazing how two planets could be at war with each other. To me, it makes no sense. I don't think I'm going to end up I don't have any... How do I say this? What if we find out that Mars really does have life forms? We know it doesn't, but what if it did? Why would we go to war with Mars? I mean, let Mars be Mars and we'll be Earth.
I think a very valid point, right? The usually you go to war with people if there's a, you know, if there's a commodity that both of you can reach and there's a disagreement about how you're going to share it. When you have two people on separate planets, you know, the stage of technology that you have to get to in order to, so you can get to these, common resources is so great that, you know, if you had that hostile instinct into your culture, you surely would have been wiped out long before you got into that, long before you got into space. But I don't know. I mean, to a certain extent, there's a similar question about, you know, how did the Klingons ever get into space if they're so warlike, and you know why didn't they spend their entire existence on their planet fighting each other in glorious combat? That's important to them.
Right. How many of them were trying to get into space, and for what reason? Okay. Or the pack lads. Period.
I keep telling you, you have to do a Blue Trek show on the packlets, and how did these guys get into space? Top 10 theories, and perhaps everyone can vote on which one's the most likely.
That's a good point. I also thought of another one. My wife came up with one of if I do loss prevention, I catch shoplifters. So if I caught a Vulcan, how would I interrogate him?
Yes.
So that would be an interesting show in and of itself there too. So anyway, we're on a clock, both on this show and on the episode. They're on a clock trying to get to Parliament, and they pass an energy cloud. Personally, I would go around it and come back to it later, but no, we're not going to go around it. We're going to get a very, very, very close sensor pass, otherwise known as going through the darn thing.
Yeah, this is dangerously close, right?
Yes, so close. Matter of fact, it's so close that it snags to a life form. Now, so basically, am I wrong that we were going to go through the cloud, or did the cloud change shape and just envelop the ship?
Well, they did mention it changed shape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the cloud changed shape so that it actually managed to touch the ship. But I'll put it this way. I mean, if you're heading towards something that you think is a cloud and it starts changing shape and coming after you, I would run.
Yeah. At least it'll stop and back up a little bit, but no, we're going to go right through it. And so Worf and LaForge are in sensor diagnostics when Worf gets, I guess you could call it an energy transfer, but I want to call it the sizzle. I kind of, you know how every show gets their moniker of Delta Quadrant has PDH. I want ours to be the sizzle.
Okay, yeah. But he certainly gets a sizzle and a half as he gets thrown across the room.
Yes. So he gets the sizzle. It bounces from Worf to Crusher, and then, you know, even Troy knows something's not wrong with her, but she doesn't tell anybody about it.
I love it when Worf does, when he does get knocked out, and then Crusher comes along with a medic, and then Worf gets very angry and like throws everyone away.
Oh yeah.
And then Geordi manages to keep Worf down somehow.
Somehow.
I mean, he must be half the weight of the other guy that was thrown off, and Geordi manages to keep him down. And then the medic that came in with Crusher, who was thrown 20 seconds earlier, stays down for a long, long time.
I was thinking that too. I mean, he should have got some kind of acting award for his portrayal of Fall and getting hurt, because it looked like he tried to get up several times, and the director said, "No, get down, get down." So he goes back down, and then he tries to get back up. "No, get your ass down." And he goes back down. It wasn't until, "Are you okay?" That's when he finally gets up.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So here's something he uses I've never heard of until this episode. Time and tide, Mr. LaForge. What's time and tide mean?
Don't know.
Okay. I was hoping it was a British thing, because
It might be. It might be.
Alright. So, go to Warp 8. Okay, so we're on our way. You know, I have here second example of someone who is off her rocker. She visits Wesley to discuss helm control. Again, mm-hmm. someone's visiting Wesley with the sizzle, and Wesley doesn't realize there's something wrong and report it.
Oh no, you're right. You're right. It is the same as with it's the same with Geordi, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought Crusher was quite good at this point, to be honest with you. She has like a very spaced out kind of like a expression and kind of wanders around. I suppose it's a little bit more likely, right, that your mum comes to your room rather than some dude from the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that was the second chance that somebody could have reported something wrong. Here's a third chance. What does helm control have to do with medical cross-checks, Data asks. But he shakes his head and goes back to work. I mean, he knows that she's there for a medical check, but yet she's getting to helm control and he just lets her.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Although Crusher does outrank Data, right? In a way.
Yes.
I'm surprised that, you know, Picard let her wander onto the bridge and just... Again, she's in this like weird spaced out kind of expression that she just manages to get by without being confronted.
Yeah.
So she'll say like just enough to not arouse a huge amount of suspicion. And I think this part's quite good, to be honest. I'm still thinking, oh, I wonder where this is going.
Yeah, she's kind of stoned. That's what she looks to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, now, guess the sizzle leaves her and goes into the computer now. So the computer now has a sizzle, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and the computer starts malfunctioning. And we have an example of Picard becoming all of a sudden very, very grumpy that his spaceship's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And, what are the chances of this not working? And, you know... And does he mention this state-of-the-art ship?
Mm.
And, you know, he gets very grumpy all of a sudden. He doesn't, he seems to be, you know, if he had a better mood, he might have realized that someone was actually wrong rather than it being the machine falling to pieces.
A design flaw? Yeah, my notes say, she is very visibly shaken but leaves the bridge just in time for every system to begin taking a massive stinky dump. The ship is less than 1 year out of space dock, and no one still asks whether Dr. Crusher could have done anything to cause this.
Yeah, true.
Okay. True. So drop-in engineer Singh, you know, what caused the malfunction? He describes it as a rampant electric short that jumped from system to system. He did speak with Chief Argyll, and in fact, he spoke with all the engineering staff, but... Where was Biff?
Biff's still around because he still comes back. In a couple of episodes, he's back.
Mm.
So he must be around.
Maybe he was in the gym working out so hard that he didn't realize things were happening. It occurs.
Well, maybe the entire engineering staff were on some type of, you know, training day or... You know, some type of social awareness course because of, you know, various incidents that they might have had. Because engineering is, you know, I would imagine that engineering is the most populated part of the ship.
Mm.
I would just imagine that there's so much going on there to make sure everything works. And it always seems to be the least habitated one, the place where the least number of people are gathered.
Right.
You know, you go into 10 forward and there are plenty of people in 10 forward. You go into engineering. You're lucky to find one person, and to me, that's strange.
They're at Risa. They were at Risa. You know that. They don't want to say that because it would show that the Federation's incompetent and let too many people go on holiday. So they're in Risa. So, anyway, back to the... meanwhile, the B-story plot. The Antikens are lurking around the Celly deck with weapons. Oh, not weapons, but, you know, they dispatch their animals with that.
And actually, this is the first time we actually have a B story
mm-hmm.
in Star Trek, Next Generation at least. So, and that was something that I noticed. And also, regarding their quote-unquote weapons, did you think that this must have been the smallest lightsaber in the world?
Yes.
That he was carrying there?
Yes,
it just looked... You know, they managed to take a really cool concept, like a laser sword, and they turned it into a really horrendously bulky thing with a small little laser that pops out the top.
Yeah. And you have to tell what they weren't too worried about it, because he does hand it back to him. If it's a weapon, why do you want to put it in the guy's hand to begin with? But he then takes it away again. Okay, done enough of that. Back to the A story. So warp's going down for the count. You know, warp 5, 4, 3, 2, ding, 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 you're out! Subspace radio goes out. Do the toilets work?
I hope so. But, I mean, at this point, they're beginning to think that it's a sabotage, right? And they're beginning to look on the delegates as either potential people that are causing these malfunctions. And
who else do they come up with?
I'm surprised that they went this route, because as a viewer, you know that it's not them, in a way. And so for the episode to work, you really have to get rid of this. You know, you can't have the viewer ahead of the people in the show, the characters in the show, because if you're significantly ahead of them, you just start thinking these guys are stupid. The captain's stupid. He's still going on about it being sabotage, but it's clearly not. Hasn't he seen the malfunctions and the light jumping around and things? So I'm surprised that they spent as long as they did with the under the false impression that it actually might have been sabotage.
Right, but who else besides the delegates did they think may have done this or had something to do with it?
Well, I don't think they ever formally suspect anyone else.
They actually bring up the Ferengi.
Ah, yes, no, who would have bribed the delegates?
Yes.
To do whatever they needed to do.
So it's funny that they actually bring up the Ferengi in this one too. So,
but even this early on, right? They are still mentioning that the Ferengi bribed them, which kind of still fits into where the Ferengi end up as capitalist Latinum lovers. Mm-hmm. So they're not completely out of character, I suppose.
No, but they're trying to set him up as the bad guy. You know, the ship goes bad and all of a sudden a Ferengi is going to come out of nowhere and try and take him, but that doesn't happen. Okay, well then Picard basically starts Data's spiral tangent into the world of the private dick. Sherlock Holmes. Here we go. Now Data starts his Sherlock Holmes fascination.
And what's your opinion of his Sherlock Holmes stories and adventures over the this one really isn't Sherlock Holmes, it's more of the genesis of the thought. But what's your opinion of where they take this?
I like the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Yeah, no, I did too. And I mean in a way, I think I mentioned on Code of Honor that it's a terrible episode, but at least it started some of the Geordi Data relationship. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, again, not good, but you know, if this is the part where they actually, you know, we're first testing out Sherlock Holmes and just proving that it seemed to be okay and good enough, then yeah, I'm happy, because I did like where that went. And I think out of all kind of literary characters that Data could play, I think Sherlock Holmes is a good match.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. One of my favorite episodes for season 2 is going to be Elementary Dear Data. So I'm looking forward to doing that one. Okay, it's the boy. The boy. He figures out the problem, but he can't get credit for it because he has to go to class and Engineer Singh takes over. I'll take over, Wesley. You know, it's a darn good thing that Wesley couldn't stay out of class that day, because then Engineer Singh would still be alive. Not saying anything about what would have happened to Wesley. I'm just, you know, thinking about Engineer Singh.
And actually, I like the idea that the engineer, he did say, yes, Wesley, I can take it from here. And it's almost as if, oh, I better take credit for this, because I'm not gonna I don't want to be the next engineer that gets sacked after I've been outwitted by a 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. So he says, shoo, Wesley, leave. I'll take it from here. Yep. Go to school.
Okay, so Yar is interrogating one of the Antigens, and he has an alibi. He was having a very large meal with a very interesting animal. Now, we know what happens later on when one of them winds up dead. Do you think that's the animal he may be having?
You know, possibly. I mean, we can talk about the thing at the end later, but rewatching it, I think it's less unambiguous than I thought it was. I think it's very clear they ended up eating each other, which is a bit weird, right?
Yeah.
But the way that it gets introduced is that, you know, Riker has to explain to them that, you know, it's a, Lieutenant Diar was a little bit confused earlier on in the episode. You know, she didn't realize you were a barbaric, barbaric race that ate animals. Please, you know, understand that we're more evolved than you guys. So, I thought that was a very kind of, you know, very smug kind of conversation to be having, especially, you know, in but a season's time, he's serving on a Klingon bird of prey eating live gah, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So what do you think of Deanna Troi's funky hypnotizer?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere, right? So I've just got down a comment saying, Troi's a hypnotist?
Yeah.
I mean...
Who knew?
Yeah, wow.
That's very cheesy. And what does Crusher come up with? Get out of my mind. You know she's talking to Picard, right?
indeed. And I mean, it's so clear at this point that I mean, we've praised Troi in the past, so we're not just having a go at Troi. But in this episode, she's just not really behaving well, right? She senses that there's duality. She senses there's an alien presence, and she doesn't really flag it up in much seriousness. And, you know, it goes a little bit later, it comes in a little bit later on. I think the crew are very slow to act when there's such a clear threat from an unknown alien. Yeah. You know, unknown alien.
Well, I was just thinking about the get out of my mind that Crusher does. So if it was about Picard, then Troi says Worf said the exact same thing. So what do you think Worf and Picard have going on that we don't know about?
I don't know, but as Worf said at the beginning, Worf needs to learn.
Yeah, his junior officers. Okay, so the diagnosis is something invaded them, and it's not done yet. In the ready room, Data explains when you eliminate all the possible, whatever remains must be the truth. And then he hears an air bubble in the fish tank and gets out his magnifying glass. So do you think Picard's fish might be a suspect?
At this point, it's the most probable.
I think Data should grill it. Get it? Grill it. Grill the fish. Wesley's back on the bridge again, and he's just not convinced that a repaired engine should be repaired like that. It just ain't right.
No, true. And this is the bit where the helm goes down, right? Mm-hmm. And as soon as the helm goes down, Worf calls, Captain, you have to come here immediately. The helm's not working. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that the captain would come and say, hey, just reboot the terminal or call your IT support desk or something. What am I supposed to do about the helm not working?
Well, it gets him on the bridge so that way he can get the sizzle.
Indeed. I think that's what it's there for.
Yes, then cut to commercial. Okay, we're back now. The helm seems fine again, so let's go for a test drive. Riker tries to get an explanation, but Picard wants to take another look at that energy cloud. He was just wasn't he just weird?
You mean, Picard's behavior?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, as soon as he got, as soon as he got invaded, unlike, I think, Crusher was a little bit on the borderline. Patrick Stewart at this point, he's just going full force into completely out of character. So I'm very surprised that, you know, anyone thought for even a second that this was normal.
Yeah. Well, the helm's down. No, it's not. Take a guess. Take another look. Yeah, come on. It'll be fine. Oh, back to the B storyline. the Sela and Antigens are going at it again, while O'Brien tries to keep them separated, but doesn't call for help. Delegates, get back to your rooms, right? But he's wearing his normal gold uniform. He's out of the red. Lucky him.
Yep, just in time.
Yep, things are looking good for Miles, or whatever his name might be at this point. We don't know. So the C storyline. A mutiny in the making. Dr. Crusher orders some exams, but Riker will have to take command of the ship. But before he could do that, Picard orders exams on them. Now,
I thought that the scene when Crusher and Riker go to meet Picard, I thought that was quite good. I thought that was quite well played, because prior to that, Picard's over the top. But I think that when he gets confronted, he plays his cards quite close to his chest, and he doesn't start going all weird or anything. And that's in contrast to when those two are sent away and Crusher returns with the medical exams. At that point, Picard basically sits there and tells her, yeah, you know, I've got an alien presence inside me, and we're heading back. And you think, why is Crusher not doing anything about this at this stage? Mm-hmm. Why isn't security called, and people are taking Picard is taking into security so that they for his own safety, because it's clear at that point that that there's something up, and it's not Picard in charge.
No. And do you notice the echo in his voice when he's talking in two life forms?
Yes, because that's true, isn't it, scientifically?
Yeah, it makes sense. And soon we'll both be home. He's basically what he's getting at. So we're back in the cloud. Go ahead.
So he referred to himself in the third person when he was referring to the captain and to the life form. So he did a weird thing where he didn't say, "Your captain," He said, "Your captain," and then he also referred to the energy, the energy life form, and he referred to both of them in the third person, which is just one step beyond for me. I thought it was one of them was in charge and one was referring to the other one in the third person, but here it's almost as if there's someone else in charge and referring to both of the components in the third person. Very weird.
The narrator.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this time Riker figures it out. An alien life form is sharing Picard's mind. And when Picard comes to the bridge for a very serious announcement, obviously there might be a viewer who hasn't caught on just yet. But the ship snatched an intelligence from the cloud and tried to go from host to host until it got the only one who could possibly understand cloud language. So he enters his resignation, which Riker's not going to accept. And he wants to go live as a cloud. And like you said, he's talking about himself in the third person. I actually had that in my notes here at this point.
And also at this point, he specifically mentions, as he's doing the exposition, he says, "Oh, and we really regret the death of Lieutenant Commander Singh earlier on." And you think, "Oh, okay, that'll be good for his wife and kids."
Yeah. I'm sorry, he was killed by a cloud. Did you notice, here's another thing I never noticed, ever, but while Picard is telling his story, she moves her hands to her hips and has this exhausted look, like, why did I sign up for this? Did you notice that?
No, I'm afraid not. I didn't notice that. The main thing I took away from this scene is that once the electric starts and how everyone's reacting, and you can clearly see that they're doing some pretty weird stuff and hoping against hope that whatever CGI or whatever, whatever special effects are put on top of it, it's going to make them look less silly. Because Deanna and some of the others are just really in very strange poses, as they're being electrocuted by the but as the blue lightning comes through.
The sizzle.
Yeah, the sizzle.
As they get the sizzle. Okay. Well, yeah, her hands go to her hips, and anyway, but Dr. Crusher tries to relieve him of duty, but unfortunately, they're all blinded by the sizzle. I liked Worf, so I'll help you if you let me!
And was it, I think it was Deanna that said, I'm blind! Which I thought was inappropriate, considering Geordi's only sitting several meters away.
Yeah, couldn't Geordi see through that?
Yeah.
Even Data was seized. Data had the closest hand there. Where is he? Asked Troy. I'm watching this again as we got Geordi's hand over his visor. Everybody else has got the pose. This is funny. Okay.
And I think, I mean, by the way, I did mention right at the start that I thought, you know, I watched this and I had more fun than I thought I was going to have. But it's at this point, I mean, if you've got to this point, this is the point where things start going down here. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I suppose, you know, there's a bit of a mystery about what the life form is that's come on board. And it's not going to be the last time we have an energy-based life form pop on board and do something. So you're a bit uncertain about what he's going to do. He kind of jumps around the various crew, and now he's got Picard. And you think, well, what now? And if you think about what he actually does now, it's just, well, he's going to beam out, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And eventually, they'll try to beam him back.
Yeah, well, after they circle the cloud for an hour.
I mean, wow. that was, I mean, it wasn't threatening in any way. It wasn't interesting in any way. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever in terms of how they got Picard back or what it even means to be beamed out as pure energy. But yeah, I didn't get, I think the payoff here is particularly poor because you don't really learn anything about these guys, and you don't really see much more than just a vague idea of that, you know, they like to learn things. Well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, after the ship circles around for an hour, you know, we can't do anything to bring him back, so it's time to move on. But before LaForce can do the time and tide and hit warp 8, Troy jumps to announce the combination of the energy wasn't possible out there. So Data comes up with a plan. Why don't we just scrape him up like we did the other life form? And it works. Picard works his way through the computer systems and forms a few P's around the ship, and especially on Geordi's console. And I hear in the new version that they did, they also put a P on Worf's console.
Yes, and there is a P on Worf's console. Yep. Is that new? Because I'm watching on the Blu-ray, and actually, the Blu-ray is very nice in this. The cloud's very nice, and it's all very crisp and clear.
Yes.
But I did see the P on Worf's console before they even mentioned the P on Geordi's, and I didn't know that that was new.
It is. Yeah. It was only done on the remix, the redone version for the Blu-ray.
Ah.
Yeah. There's a picture on Memory Alpha that shows the difference between the two. So.
Okay.
So anyway, Data beams him back, but what the devil am I doing here? Asks Picard. Yes, he's back to normal. Life aboard the ship returns to normal.
Can I have a quick moan about what on earth are they trying to do? Well, I don't understand the science behind this, right? They beam someone out in terms of energy. And actually, I'm going to come on to this in a second, but in order to beam him back, they use a matter pattern from before, mm-hmm. and they can like scoop up some energy. However, I assume that it can't just be any energy, but it has to be Picard's energy mm-hmm. somehow. And yeah. that doesn't make sense because energy is not, you know, people don't own energy. And somehow Troy knows that it is Picard, despite it not being anything other than energy. And then they make him materialize. It sounds like they're basically going, here's hoping that whatever we materialize will be Picard, and it is Picard, and not only that, he's got, I don't know, whatever life he had previously. And to me, it just seemed really quite far-fetched, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Because I think Picard should be different from here on out. He should have a little bit of energy in him, or, you know, a little bit of the cloud. from now on. I don't get that either. They got his ones and zeros, but not any of the clouds.
Also, by the way, it's time for my scientific inaccuracy of the week.
You're going to do that.
I am going to do this. Because they keep, and this is a really common misconception, but they keep referring to energy and matter as if there's some, these are kind of two things that are either equivalent or opposite sides of the same coin or something like that. I mean, matter, right, is just what, you know, makes up the physical world. So anything from a photon through to, you know, a cheeseburger is matter. Energy is nothing to do with matter, almost in any way whatsoever. Energy is just, it's a property of matter. You can't be transferred into energy any more than, because, you know, the same way that you have, you know, height, you can't be transferred into height. Height's a property of a physical object. Energy is a property of a physical object. You can't be transferred into energy. And I find it really strange that they keep using the word energy, but they don't mean energy at all. That they might mean, you know, that they might mean like radiation. They might mean, you know, photons or something. They actually don't mean energy, or they can't mean energy because it's meaningless. It's, you know, it's like saying, you know, oh, Picard's gone, but his, you know, his smoothness has been transferred out into the cloud. It's not a physical quantity that is, that's able to encapsulate anything.
Plus, once it's out there, how do they get it all back? I mean, doesn't it spread around?
Yeah, I just don't think it's in any way thought through. Right. And I think that it's a common misconception. Because people think that, people think that things you can touch are somehow matter, and things you can't must be something else. And energy often comes up, and it's not a, it doesn't really work like that.
No, okay, I see. All right, then, I guess we're done with this. Well, we should mention the puddle of blood that's outside the Sealy quarters, and the cook's been asked to boil a reptile that kind of looks like one of the Sealy, but, you know, let's just get out of the purple cloud, and we'll deal with justice for the Sealy later. Oh, speaking of justice, next week, justice.
Actually, this is strange, right? Because Yar rushes in and says, oh, Commander, you know, and she says, you know, one of the cities been gone missing, and there's a pile of blood, and Riker says, couldn't this have waited? But in one way, it's murder. There's been murder on the ship of 1,000 people, which is not a large number of people for murder to be taking place. And surely people would be a little bit more concerned about murder.
You would think.
But yeah, couldn't this have waited a minute? It's only a lizard man.
Yeah. Plus, we didn't get a funeral for Engineer Singh.
No, you're right. No. You're right. So two murders on the same day.
Out of all the souls that he's, you know, in his travels, Singh's was the most unknown. Anyway, okay. So
I hope you do. You do love Wrath of Khan, though, right?
Yes.
You're not. You're doing that with a lot of respect.
Absolutely.
I hope. Oh, good. Because it. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd have issues.
Oh, God, I think Wrath of Khan was the best one they did. The best movie ever.
It's not just the best. It's the best by a long way.
By a long, long way.
Yeah. And I think that too few people recognize how good it is. Even in the Star Trek community, people think that it's, people think it's up there with. It's not up there with. It's up there alone.
That's up there alone. Well, here's the thing. The motionless picture put everybody to sleep, and the Wrath of Khan more than woke them up. It was like a jolt of energy shots. Yes, Wrath of Khan is number one. Number one.
It's now time to get a rating to this episode from a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Now, I enjoyed doing this episode. I enjoyed rewatching this one, and for a long time in my mind, I've been going back and forth where I think I'm going to place it. And I was very close to deciding I was going to place it at a 3. But it's because it was a lot of fun. And I think at least until you get to the very, very final part where it just untangles and just makes no sense, I enjoyed it. Or at least I enjoyed the A plot of it. I didn't particularly care for the delegates in any way. Although, strangely, that's my main memory of having a having previously watched this, but it's not good enough for a 3. It's being downgraded to a 2. It's not the worst. There'll be worse coming along, but it's certainly, you know, you can't take this episode and put it into a later season and not have it really stink the place out. And I think that's really what kind of like a sign of an average episode would be, that you could take it and then put it elsewhere. And there are examples of that in season one, that they would stand their own compared to later written shows. And unfortunately, I don't think this is one of them. So I'm giving it a 2. How about you, Lou?
Okay. Mark Alamo, should be good enough to give the story an extra half point, I'm sure. I did my best to hear his voice, but obviously they distorted the Antigen sound, so I couldn't tell at all. Obviously, the whole beaming out energy thing can't possibly work, like you said. In fact, doesn't Voyager and Enterprise try to tackle the same very story? Neelix uses a computer to save dead people from the Metrion Cascade, and the transporter inventor, Dr. Emery Erickson, uses a transporter to save his dead son. Both of those attempts involved coherent energy patterns, but they both failed. The Sally and the Antigens are obviously filler for the real story, which is the Picard and the Cloud, which must not, didn't have much substance, so the Delegate story had to be put in. I think the Sally and the Antigen story probably came in late, because we just don't have enough Picard and the Cloud thing. Also, if the Delegates were on their way to Parliament to see about being members of the Federation, I did ask the questions. Why do the Bajorans need to wait so many years to get accepted? It's a pretty weak story. Stupid characters, weak plot device with the energy. I'm being very generous and giving this one a 2 as well. I wanted to give it a 1 and say, hopefully, Mike, you agree with that one better than Code of Honor. But in the end, it's Star Trek. I can't be too harsh on it. I guess I'll just give this a... We can't do a 1.5, so I'll give it a 2. Mark Alamo, you gave it a 2.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
They certainly are a fit.
The crew visits a planet of sensual pleasure.
Death?
By breaking any law.
But an innocent violation.
No, Wes!
Puts Wesley's life in jeopardy.
Drop it now.
And despite everyone's rescue attempts.
He's being held safely until sundown.
He faces an alien death sentence. On Star Trek The Next Generation.
So, join us next week as we review Season 1, Episode 8, Justice.
Yes. Otherwise, I call it softcore porn. And what do we do when we go to a planet where there's softcore porn everywhere? Let's bring the teenager.
Yep. He's trying it out for the younger members of the crew.
All right, everyone. See you next week.